Hello and welcome to episode 53 of the Structure and Interpretation of Computer Programmers podcast, helping programmers to become software engineers. And what I want to talk about in this episode is the distinction between focusing on a single platform, technology, programming language, framework, so on, or being a generalist, because I've moved between the two during my careers. And I think it's easy for people who have focused on one to not see the benefits of the other, and vice versa. So I want to sort of talk about both of these and contextualize that with my history. So I think, you know, there is something useful in documenting my interest and disinterest in focusing on particular technologies over the years, both to demonstrate that deep specialization and transferable generality have value, and to explain how these different worldviews sort of empathize with each other, or perhaps fail to do so. So in the beginning, we have to look at what I would call the basic years, which are 1980 mumble, and this puts me very much in a particular category, and a very common and undiverse category of people who are now professional programmers. But 1980 mumble to 1998-ish. Now, at that time, I had access to microcomputers. My parents had a Dragon 32 during the 80s, and then an Amiga 600 in the 90s, and then a PC. And I was able to, you know, use all of these things, and was very interested in just like exploring what I could do with them and learning how to use them. And my programming skills were really the sort of basic programs that you get in a magazine like Dragon User and type into the computer for input, or books that were published during that era. These were programs that were typically written by hobbyists themselves, which were published in listing format, and you type them in, and then typically they don't work, and you then wait for the next issue of the magazine to get an errata, or if you are particularly competent, then you debug them, and you diagnose what's going on, and you fix the listings yourself. Now, when I say I was a basic programmer, that doesn't mean that I was using a single technology. I mean, Microsoft wrote Microsoft Extended Color Basic on the Dragon 32. They also provided the Amiga Basic in the first version of the Amiga OS, but I didn't have that version 1 of Amiga OS, so the Amiga I had, you had to use third-party products like GFA or AMOS or Blitz Basic. I knew that other programming languages were available, but either lacked the opportunity or the motivation to discover much about them, or to try them out. So, for example, on both computers, I knew that there was a machine language, and that this was supposed to be more difficult to learn and faster. But of course, I had no expectations about how fast my programs would run, and difficult to learn doesn't sound that appealing, and so I just stuck with BASIC. Maybe towards the end of this period, I dabbled with some other programming environments. I definitely used Borland's Delphi when I was at school. There was an OS2 computer that had Rex on it. I would have done some other things, started to learn a bit of Pascal outside of the Borland world, but I didn't really have any sort of applications that I wanted to write. I wasn't doing this for any reason. I was doing this to explore the computer, and I wasn't committed to a particular computer. I was committed to understanding and learning about the computer that was in front of me. It was a hobby, and that goes back to what I was saying about being an undiverse member of this programming community. There are people who have gone into programming because it is a profession that they want to pursue, and have done either vocational or academic courses of education to get there. But there is a lot of people with a very broad, probably like X to millennial generation, who got their interest in computers from the home computing movement. So these are the people who are post homebrew computing club, who, you know, so not the people who were like making and founding Apple and Sinclair and Acorn and all of these companies, but the people who used their products and who discovered some excitement in the use of these products. These are the, you know, the people who bought this generation of home computers, or the people who had access to them through, say, school in the UK. That would have been initially the Acorn BBC computer, formerly the Acorn Proton. It would have been the Acorn Archimedes computer later in the period, or maybe at home they had, you know, a Sinclair ZX81, ZX Spectrum, a Commodore 64, a Dragon, you know, something like that. But the generation that bought these computers and the generation that grew up with access to them and was just interested in the computer for its own sake. And that was a very, whether intentionally or otherwise, very sort of male-dominated, you know, very much sort of has disposable time that can be thrown into learning about these tools. And so on the one hand, it's quite a enthusiasm. Of course, there can be gatekeeping within that community, and so that also means it can be very undiverse, both who is targeted in, say, the marketing for the hobbyist equipment, but also the what kind of knowledge or enthusiasm or commitment you need to demonstrate in order to be accepted as a member of the in crowd. And you can put that generation of technologists in context with other novel technologies throughout time. For example, when X-rays were new, there weren't like professional radiographers. You didn't need a background in like medicine or in physiology to do X-rays. You needed some photographic paper and either a röntgen machine or some like X-ray source, and people would take each other's X-rays at parties. That's the kind of world into which that generation of self-taught, supposedly computer programmers sit, and the style of role that they have carved out for themselves is one where if you had a computer and you were excited to learn what went on, then that was sufficient qualification for becoming a professional. And as I say, that wasn't a very tribal thing. That was what was available, what was in front of me. That was sort of learning that these things exist and that it was possible to do things with them, even though I didn't really have ideas of what one might do with them. But then in the next phase, which I've kind of called the Oxonian explosion because it sounds a bit like Cambrian explosion, it's a bit of a pun, but also it's around the time that I went to university, so we're talking sort of 98-ish to 2002-ish, I learned a lot of other programming languages. And I just tried out, again, the things that that were available or that I learned about, or you know, was able to sort of get on a CD or whatever, or download. So you know, we carry on Pascal from the previous generation, from the end of the basic years, but then start to add C, C++, Modular 2, Java, JavaScript, Oberon. Got interested in Linux when I went to university, so then Bash, C Shell, Emacs Lisp, Perl, Python, and started to buy my own books about this. So I wasn't just like reading the magazines that were available or checking out books from like the school library on programming. I was starting to go, oh, that looks like an interesting thing. I will try that thing out myself and, you know, maybe buy a book on it, maybe like learn what I can do. And this started me down a particular technology route. I mean, I got very interested in Linux and Unix, and then in the sort of philosophy and mindset associated with that, because of what I was saying about that, you know, that sort of entry into the like the self-taught world. You don't have to merely be self-taught to sort of participate in it. You also signal what you were self-taught and what you believe. And I learned about free software culture and Unix philosophy, and so wanted to like demonstrate those things, like signal the fact that I was in that camp. And so that's really the end of any interest in Windows that I had. I mean, I've since used probably every version of Windows that's been released, but I haven't put any effort into understanding them or learning them. So, you know, technologies that are newer than that period, so PowerShell, for example, I've got no idea how to use. I don't know like how a Windows file system is laid out anymore. I've actually used a Windows computer on an approximately weekly or fortnightly basis for the DOS Amigans show. It's running the emulator that we use for doing the Amiga programming on. But literally, I log in, it auto starts the Amiga emulator. It's running Windows 10. The computer it's on is not capable of supporting Windows 11. I have no particular investment in it. You know, I tried to get interested in like setting up cloud syncing with my documents and putting Emacs on it and things. I just, you know, decided life's too short. I'm just going to use it as what Stephen Baker would call a Wintendo, as an appliance, not as a computer. So now we start to see that there is some technology focus, and it's not motivated by what is, you know, good for the job. What's a good tool for the job? It's not motivated by picking a thing that is better somehow. It is motivated by signaling that I am in one group and that therefore other technologies are part of an out-group. And this really sort of focused in what I would call the next years, so from approximately 2002 to 2014, because, you know, I'd been in this like Linux world. I had discovered C. I had then, you know, used GCC, and I saw the like banner text that said GCC supports C, C++, and Objective-C. And so, you know, I'd like dabbled a bit with C++ and done some like KDE UIs using the Qt framework. I hadn't used Objective-C, and I mentioned to the IT administrator on my degree that there was this Objective-C language and I didn't know anything about it, but I was interested in learning it. And he pointed to some black computers in the lab and said, well, those use Objective-C. You can borrow the books about that and try out Objective-C on those. They were, of course, Next computers. Obviously, at this point, like a legacy installation of Next computers. I actually became responsible in 2004. For migrating, there'd been a partial migration to Solaris and then migrating the desktops to the Mac, because with Mac OS X, all of that next step technology was in place on the Mac. So then I had a deep focus, because I kind of decided, oh, right, this, you know, this interest of mine in Objective-C and this provision of Objective-C by Next, and the fact that it's familiar, like Unix and C shell and everything, because I've learned about that from the Linux world, that felt like a sort of natural like home for my further interests and natural like area to focus on. So then I became quite deeply focused on C, Objective-C, Bash, Perl via like the camel bones or the Perl Objective-C bridge, Python via the Py Objective-C bridge. I became strongly opinionated about the superiority of the next technology and the bits of Mac OS X that were inherited from the next technology. So not even about Mac OS X. You know, I wasn't someone who enjoyed or approved of even things like Carbon or AppleScript. I've since picked up some AppleScript and used it professionally and, you know, sort of seen some benefit in it. But I had this worldview that was shaped by, you know, this matches what I want the world to look like, therefore I'm going to tell everybody else that this is the best thing ever, and hopefully the world will actually come to look at that, or look like that. And, of course, over that period, so 2002 to 2014, we add AppKit, or UIKit. That's also the time when I learned about the history of object-oriented programming. I learned that Objective-C was based on Smalltalk, so I learned about Smalltalk. I learned about other approaches to OOP, like Eiffel and so on, and I wanted to kind of put these into a framework that gave me like a deep expertise on the next step way of doing things. I mean, I'm kind of abridging a lot of like different things that I did and used over this time. I mean, I did learn enough Android to contribute to some Android projects during that period. I did continue to use other Unix systems like Linux and Solaris and the BSDs, but I became like a Next fan and a Cocoa fan, and gained a deep technological understanding of that, but also a desire to promote that which, on reflection, comes from wanting to be correct about having picked it as a technology to focus on professionally, rather than because of any innate technical superiority. Now, obviously, there is good technical quality in that technology. It lasted from like 1985-ish when Next started right up until now, and is still in use today, and you can still like create new projects and you know, build new applications with all that thing. That is amazing longevity, amazing like reliability for a software platform. There is like there is technical greatness in there. What I'm saying is that I wasn't a one horse race or a one trick pony or whatever analogy I should have used there, because that was the best thing. That was the best thing because I was the one trick pony. This was also a period where I started to, and this is a like important and useful fact to notice. I then started to care about how applications were made and what applications did. I cared about doing things what is now called the MacAST Mac app way, and like networked deeply in that field. So I went to loads of conferences, read loads of blogs, contributed to like mailing lists and forums, read you know, everything that was coming up on the Cocoa Dev list and so on, because like the MacAST Mac app bit of it is because, having decided that this is the way that I wanted the world to work, I wanted to like understand how that world worked and contribute to the world working that way. But also I started to understand, like, you know, so if this is the computer that I've got, if I'm going to be like using these for the foreseeable future, then I would like it to do this. It doesn't do this, therefore I need to write this software. Or someone wants this a computer to do this, I think that this is the computer that should do this for them. And so that sort of unlocked some like less abstract interest in software and more like pragmatic interest in software. So I was simultaneously dogmatic in choice of technology, programming language, frameworks, tools, and so on, but also pragmatic in that I could say, I don't care whether this is the best way to make this thing exist, because I had already like prejudged that it was. But I want a computer that does this. I will use this computer to do this. I care about the fact that this can be done on this computer. And then, and I've talked about this on the blog and on the podcast before, there was a sort of burnout-induced wilderness years, which go from 2014 to, well, I would say probably approximately now, where I like lost connection with my previous work and with my previous like professional network, contacts, friends in that field, in that discipline. I had a much stronger interest in demonstrating technology agnostic software skills and in demonstrating that I could transfer to different technologies and pick them up and like deliver software effectively with them. And indeed, I did so. And you know, those skills included like programming on other platforms, so things like you know, more on Android and on cross-platform mobile tools like Xamarin and React Native, Node.js, TypeScript, PHP, back to Python and C++. So you know, using technologies that I had seen before in order to like demonstrate the ability to deliver like non-Mac apps, and also then things like management and software architecture and coaching and mentoring and like the people side of software. So this is the period in which, you know, I started to like develop ideas like the object-oriented programming, the Easy Way manifesto. And there was a bit of like, you know, using that same energy that told me the next technology is the best thing ever, therefore you're all wrong if you don't do it. That energy then manifested as, I've kind of wasted my time focusing on this one little niche of software, therefore maybe everyone is wasting their time focusing on niches in software. I was much more interested. I learned a lot more during this phase of my professional existence. I learned much more about understanding what people want from this thing, understanding the social system, understanding what the customer wants, also what the business leadership want, what the people in like the non-programming roles within the software team or like the wider product team want, and understanding how to sort of fit those needs together. And that is all like, you know, very useful and very important skills when it comes to understanding how to develop software. Maybe coming quite late into the process, you know, having spent like approximately 2 decades as a subject matter expert, to suddenly go into a much like broader, more sort of consultancy focused, is this the right thing for the people involved, is a very broad shift, and not one that I've necessarily got enough of a theoretical understanding to do well, even if I have got like some experience in what has or hasn't worked. You know, so am I just like repeating the same stories that everyone else has already learned? And if I am, is that necessarily a bad thing? Have they necessarily been like taken on board everywhere in like equal measure? So I said up to approximately now in that phase. Is there an end to the wilderness years? Well, I think that there is now what I might term a sort of pragmatic dogmatism, in that like, I'm more willing to accept that not all of the ideas I've seen are implemented equally in all places. So I don't need to reject like this area of technology because it doesn't do design by contract in the way that I would like. And I don't need to reject this one because it doesn't do message passing OOP in the way that I would like. I can accept I can make forward progress in this environment, whether or not I agree with everything, that every decision has been made in the design of this environment. But I'm also much more metacognitive and able to reflect on what my capabilities and skills are and choose to find ways to do this work that make the most use of those skills and of that experience. So you know, rather than saying, right, I am like heads down into this technology, I will only do that technology, I can now say, I need to solve this problem, and there is an overlap between what I know from having learned about this technology and what this person needs based on my understanding of their problem, which means that I can use those skills in this place, but I will also need to, you know, learn about this thing. So what do we learn from that? I think that they're basically, I mean, there is too much technology in the software world for anyone who says this is the best tool for the job to actually know that it is the best tool for the job. It is maybe the best tool that they have used, but they probably haven't used all of the tools. And if they have used a large number of tools, like I have, they probably haven't used them all in more than a tire-kicking sense. Like, if we replay what we have learned about my career to date, it's I have like about 2 broken decades of basic experience, about 2 broken decades of Objective-C experience, maybe about 2 broken decades of Pascal Modular 2 Oberon experience, and then a lot of different things that I have also done. So I don't think I mentioned having done Java mostly with WebObjects, but like I've done Java. I've not only done the next stuff, I've done GNUSTEP on like Solaris and Linux and BSDs. I've done a little bit on like Windows. I remember using the .NET beta when Microsoft came around for a roadshow in about 2002. So I have used all of these things. If someone said, I am trying to work on this project and I have the choice of programming language, which is the best one, could I give them an honest answer? No, there are thousands that I haven't tried. Many that I have tried for maybe like a day or so, you know, the ones that are in the 7 Languages in 7 Weeks book, that I couldn't give an honest evaluation of because I've only like written some, you know, little toy programs in. And then ones I have like deep interest in and would choose, not necessarily for any objective reason, pardon the pun. But that is not to say that if there was a technology problem that came up and I was in a position where I could, you know, work on this problem, solve this problem, and there were constraints that meant having to use some technology that I was unfamiliar with, I couldn't pick it up. Would I do as good a job as in any other technology, particularly one that I'm experienced with? Probably the answer is yes, given enough time, but the time that would be required would be a lot greater. And would I do the thing that would be considered idiomatic by the people who are deeply invested in that community? Almost certainly not. Is that a problem? Well, again, we, you know, discover that this depends. It depends on whether the people who are deeply invested in that technology are going to be evaluating that work. If not, then maybe it doesn't matter. You know, maybe if you write a Macast Oberon app and nobody ever reads your Oberon code, or the people who read it aren't going to comment on your conformance to Oberon community expectations, then it isn't that big a deal. So there's the sort of trade-off there. Someone who is cross-platform, you know, who has got a broad background in various technologies, probably hasn't got much of a broad background in various technologies, but probably is capable of just like taking some like paradigmatic ideas like object-oriented programming or functional programming and saying, right, how do we do them in this context? Is capable of taking some like you know, repeatable ideas like design patterns or user experience patterns and applying them in a new context, and probably has, like, to the extent that they have multiple technologies and experience in them, probably colours what they do in an agnostic, scare quotes, sense, with the experiences that are actually tacit to the technology communities and user groups and so on that they have got experience in. Someone who is a very deep technologist in a particular area is likely to have sort of landed in that area, become deeply skilled at it, and have that deep understanding, and then use that as an explanation, like justification for the quality of those tools. And so, you know, someone who is like very deeply invested in Elixir is going to have very different reasons for that investment than someone who is very deeply invested in JavaScript. And is going to selectively present the properties of what makes it good in such a way that that thing becomes good. And that's based on my experience as the person who is like so deeply invested in the Next technology that they didn't even like all of Mac OS X because half of it came from Apple and not from Next. So hopefully there's some sort of more general ideas about like what technology generalists or specialists look like based on the fact that I've sort of gone through both in my history. Obviously, if you have other experiences, other reasons for picking the particular routes or for going down the pathways that you have trodden, I would love to hear about that. Please just send me an email, grahamlee@acm.org. You can find me on Twitter. I was Lee G, IWASLEEG. Thanks very much for listening, and I will talk to you again soon.